Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch rushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
What's up, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday, April 20th. Frank Sample joined by the Chris's, Towers, and the Welsh. Today on the show, we're going to recap all of Wednesday's action, more waiver wire pitchers, we'll break down Mason Miller's debut, and much more. Before we get started, please like this video and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already. And if you're listening on the audio side, download, follow, and leave a 5-star rating. Really appreciate it, and it helps a lot. Let's jump right in. Players of the night.
I don't believe it! My,
oh my, from the legendary Mariners broadcaster, David Niehaus. And with that, Towers, we'll start with you. Oh my goodness gracious, player of the night.
Scott White, who said to start Johan Oviedo at Coors Field. I would not have done that. And Scott turns out to be correct. Johan Oviedo had an excellent start on Wednesday night. It's Wednesday, right? I always forget. My schedule's weird.
Sure.
Six strikeouts, one earned run, three hits allowed with three walks, only three hard hit balls in this outing. 13 swinging strikes on 84 pitches. 10 of those, of course, coming on his slider. It's a really, really good pitch. It's been really, really effective for him. I still have my concerns about how sustainable Johan Oviedo's performance is so far, because I'm not sure, even with, you know, a fastball that averages 97 miles per hour, I don't know how good any of his other pitches are beyond the slider, but the results have been excellent. He solved Coors Field. I do think it's worth pointing out, just as a general rule, that Coors Field is such a weird environment that, like, good or bad, I don't ever know how much you can really take from a start there, just because it's so different than any other place. And it's like, it's sort of random when pitchers do well, but he did well, you know, and that's continuing a trend for Johan Oviedo. It's been a very impressive little run so far for him. And has to be, I think, 100% rostered at this point.
Johan Oviedo currently 66% rostered. He is a SPARP on CBS, so he has RP eligibility for those who play in points leagues. And you can beat the waiver wire by adding him now, because it looks like he does have two starts next week up against the Dodgers, another test, and at the Washington Nationals. So kind of has those Jekyll and Hyde matchups going on for next week. Mm-hmm. I'll save the comparisons for later, because I have a bunch of other pitchers I want to talk about as well. And we'll compare Oviedo to Mackenzie Gore and Kyle Bradish and Mason Miller as well. We'll save that for just a little bit. But yes, Johan Oviedo has looked really, really good so far. Awesome slider. Strikeouts have been there, keeping the walks down. You know, and look, the Pirates are actually hitting the ball so far. So
yeah,
getting some run support too.
We'll point out, he's had the one huge strikeout game, the 10 strikeout game. Very impressive against the Cardinals. I don't want to take away from it. Strikeouts haven't been quite there. The other four or other three starts, it's been 4, 5, and 6. 15 strikeouts and 17 in the third inning. So you know, just something to keep in mind. We're dealing with very small sample sizes. We're dealing with a guy who has never performed anywhere close to this level as a full-time starter. So, you know, we'll see. But it's been very, very impressive so far.
You know what I'm curious about when I think of, like, Oviedo, when you said he's a must start? I almost want to take, like, who are all the, like, really bad teams overall that are going to just struggle with wins? And, like, how many must start pitchers exist out of all of those guys? So it's like the A's, none. Yeah. I mean, there could be an argument. Do you want to put the Pirates in there? You're saying Oviedo. What are the other, like, really bad teams? The Tigers? Is Eduardo Rodriguez a must
start? No, I don't think he's a must roster now.
Okay, so what's another like trash team? Would you, I don't know if you put the Reds in there,
right? Royals. Now? I don't think the Royals have one.
Nationals.
We'll get to that.
Nationals.
I can't, the Gore. Gore and Gray
are interesting, but I don't know. Certainly not must start for Gore and Gray.
So is Oviedo the number one bad team pitcher, is what you're saying?
Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo are in that conversation.
Okay, if you're putting the Reds in there.
I think those are probably the other best options. It depends how you feel about, like, I think the White Sox are better than they've been so far, but, you know.
They've also got a better offense. Like, I kind of look at it as, like, not just bad pitching staffs, but, like, just bad offensive support that's kind of around them and tools. So,
well, then the Marlins in that in that category, too.
We're not gonna put Sandy Alcantara quite in that territory yet. Yeah. He is gonna exclude it. So it's like Oviedo is in a small group of what we would probably typically not suggest to people. Like, you know, pitchers on bad teams.
That's right. Welsh, oh my goodness gracious, for you, you're actually going down a different path here. Who do you have?
Oh my, Madison Bumgarner, how are you still here? Oh my. You know what? Nothing is surprising of what happened with Madison Bumgarner, except that he's still pitching. That's about it. So, oh my goodness gracious, how do the Diamondbacks continuously let this happen? How do they let him give up all those runs? You know what's awesome, too, is he started the game. Madison Bumgarner started the game. Two relief pitchers on the Diamondbacks ended up having more swing and whiffs, more whiffs than Madison Bumgarner actually had in this game. He looked as bad as he always does. He had four total whiffs on 34 swinged pitches, and 80 total pitches were in there. It's garbage. The fastball, not good. Curveball, not good. Every pitch, not good. And it just comes to, like, it comes to a head. And finally, what you're seeing, let you guys know, some of the Diamondbacks radio personalities that are around here that, yeah, I would call them, like, they're fed from the, you know, when the team and people start to give them information, when they speak, it's because team personnel are starting to tell them. And one of these guys, John Gambadoro, said there is no chance under any circumstance Madison Bumgarner pitches this next game, whether it's a ghost injury or they completely cut it off. Also, he had that little incident with Contreras. He is such a cancer to baseball right now. I want him to go away, and this team, and a Diamondbacks team. We've all said this, and I'm just not saying anything new here, but if they take themselves seriously to be winners, there's no chance that this guy can continuously go out there while Brandon fought too. Of the whole thing, you know, long-term about him, but it's interesting. His Stuff Plus numbers haven't been great so far in the minors. I was looking at Eno Saris's Stuff Plus, but no pitcher had better Stuff Plus that went into the 80 pitch range. It's just very interesting. All of the pitches in high Stuff Plus numbers are guys that go about 50 pitches per game. Brandon Pfaadt is averaging 87 pitches a game. Guess what? 87 Brandon Pfaadt pitches, whatever he does, is better than Madison Bumgarner. So why he's there, I will not understand. Oh my goodness. You're muted though, Towers.
And the way his contract is set up, he's due $23 million this year. Then it drops to $14 million. That's a lot of money. You know, the Diamondbacks aren't the Red Sox or the Yankees, but, like, the fact that that contract was front loaded, it probably makes it a lot easier to get out of. I would be shocked if they cut him right now, but
he will not take a bullpen roll. And it's a clear cut that he will not take a bullpen. There's no chance he's going to take a bullpen roll. The best way that this can happen, and this is what they should do, is they've got to phantom injury him. There's just no other way around it, because he's going to be a huge distraction to the team. And, you know, the positive that they've had going for themselves this entire time is that Brandon Pfaadt, not only in the minors, it's very funny. I actually spoke to Brandon Pfaadt one day where he was piggybacking Madison Bumgarner that day during a spring training, and that has continued in on the season where he is kind of the same schedule as Madison Bumgarner. Probably not a super crazy thing that the Diamondbacks did here. So the expectation is this has got to be the last straw. Literally the only thing that anybody can clamor towards is the money. And at some point, winning teams have to look past the money just a tiny bit, especially when that person is causing, single-handedly causing losses. This is a negative WAR player. Madison Bumgarner got to go.
And Brandon Pfaadt, he did get knocked around in his first start at AAA this season, but then he's been much better in the past two. 4 2/3, 1 run, 5 strikeouts, and then his most recent start, 5 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts in that one. And correct me if I'm wrong, Welsh, but I just checked the Reno box score, and he didn't start on Wednesday night, so I assume he's probably going to start tomorrow on Thursday. Is that it?
Yeah, that's right. It's funny. While we were doing all this, too, I was actually going to the Savant like leaderboard page to see if he was up on there, and I'm guessing he's going to probably go tomorrow. Which, here's something I would watch. Here's something I would watch if he does pitch tomorrow. Let's see if there's a pitch count. Maybe, mm-hmm. He's been going 87 pitches a game. What if you see him go 50? That might be calculated and be a little bit of a telling story if the Diamondbacks don't announce something for next week.
So Brandon Pfaadt is 39% rostered on CBS right now, and I know that he is in Scott's top 5 prospects to stash right now, the top pitcher to stash. So if you're looking for that next guy, we've had so many call-ups already this season. We'll talk about Mason Miller in just a little bit, but Brandon Pfaadt is that next name that you want to stash, especially if you play in a points league. Brandon Pfaadt threw a bunch of innings last year. I think he's someone that if he pitches well, they're going to let him go 6. He's going to give you quality starts. He actually led the minors in strikeouts last season as well. So just so much to like about Brandon Pfaadt. Make sure to stash him now if you can. Oh my goodness gracious, for me is Luis Garcia of the Astros. I know it's like 5 different Luis Garcias, but he was off to a slow start, and we were getting some questions, some tweets, people asking, what do we do with Luis Garcia? He's off to a slow start. He's been like rock solid in his career. He's not an ace, but he's just like your prototypical SP3, SP4 mm-hmm. in the rotation, and he pitches on a really good team, and he was fantastic on Wednesday night up against the Blue Jays. 7 shutout with 9 strikeouts, 23 swinging strikes on 92 pitches. That is a number we usually see from the likes of Jacob DeGrom.
19 of them with his cutter.
19
crazy. 19 whiffs on 34 swings. That's a 56% whiff rate. That is like a 35% swinging strike rate overall. Those have different denominators, which is confusing.
What's the highest single pitch? Like, I would love to know, like, what is the highest single pitch in recent history of whiffs, like a fastball or a curveball? Like, what is that's an insane number off of the cutter. That seems like that's got to be near the top.
Yeah, that is a tremendous amount. And it's always been a great pitch for Luis Garcia, even entering this start. While he's gotten off to, a rough start overall, his cutter this year has a 42% whiff rate, and it's always been a really good pitch for him. So I don't know if this is something he can maintain, throwing that pitch over 50% of the time consistently. But man, using it more, it looks like that could be a recipe for success for him. He kept the walks down in this start, still averaging 10.3K per 9 on the season. And as I mentioned, he's been rock solid. And I think this is just kind of his start to get back on track. So if you were looking to buy low, I would say that window has probably closed. I don't think you should try and sell based on this. I think you're probably going to wind up getting what you expected out of Luis Garcia. I guess the one caveat with him is coming into the year, he was one of those pitchers that, he had the long delivery and he's rocking back and forth. And I guess we kind of had some question marks about how that would work because he had to change his delivery this season with the new rules being implemented. Welsh, is that something that worries you when it comes to Luis Garcia?
Yeah, I think so. I think like there's a lot of like overall worries with pitchers in general about like the pitch clock adjusting things, not to make it about this. But another one we've kind of seen is maybe like Alek Manoah. We were talking about this today on ITL. He struggled so much and he was kind of a slow pace of game type of guy. And that maybe comes back to a little bit of a weight question and how he's adjusting in between. This obviously wasn't that with Luis Garcia, but he had to go from rocking the baby to making quicker pitches and decisions. And it's like, we're kind of seeing full throttle. I think that's a worry. Anybody that has anything unique or on a negative side of unique to moving quickly, that was a worry. And Luis Garcia was the poster child of this. I don't think I actually would have put Alek Manoah in that. So yeah, I was worried about that, but the adjustments have come. And they've come at the expense also of a pitch becoming plus-plus at this point. If that whiff rate is going to continue to go on with the cutter, it's going to give him the arsenal and the ability to move through hitters at a degree that really might be a buy at this point. You know, maybe Luis Garcia can be purchased in the trade market for a little bit less than you would actually think what his production is actually getting you.
So you're not looking to sell high, right?
I mean, I'm always open to selling high, but that singular pitch I think is really interesting on a fantastic team for a guy that can go deep into games. And one of the things we kind of like always picked at him about was that slow pace, and that's kind of changed and he's adjusted to it well. So I think it's actually working in his favor. So I'm open to both. If someone wants to give me, like, you know, original Luis Garcia price, let's go. If someone wants to overpay because of these big numbers we're talking about him, I'm probably also listening to that as well. I just think he can overperform what his name brought in draft season.
Okay, so I have Luis Garcia ranked at SP 59. Scott has him at SP 53. Chris Towers, you have him down at SP 69. So if anyone's willing to pay, like, I don't know,
I need to move him up, yeah.
Top 50, no, not even, like top 45, top 40 value, then okay, maybe look into it, but that's yeah. probably not going to be the case for Luis Garcia. On the other side of that start, I do want to give a shout out to Jose Barrios, who got back on track here. Seven innings, two runs, only three strikeouts going up against Houston. Incredibly efficient. He only needed 77 pitches to get through seven innings against the Astros lineup. Obviously, it's, you know, not the Astros lineup we're used to, but still had 10 swinging strikes, and he leaned all the way into that slurve that he throws. He threw it 49% of the time, excuse me, and that was only 35% usage entering the start. And don't look now, but Barrios has allowed two earned runs or fewer in back-to-back starts. I don't know that he's quote-unquote back, but these are encouraging signs. So if anyone dropped him, like someone dropped him in my Doubt Wars League, that's a 12-team head-to-head points league with roto-style lineup. So it goes pretty deep, and I actually picked him up. And in Tout Wars, you pick someone up, you have to start him. So I start him this week, and damn, I feel pretty good at what I got from Jose Barrios. So, yeah, I think we're kind of building some momentum with him. Let's talk about
Unfortunately, I can't find a way to search for the most swings and misses by one pitch type.
I was going to give you so much, like, I was a prayer's bow, like, we're not worthy, because I was like, how are you going to find
that? James Paxton got 25 swings and misses with his fastball in a start back in 2018. So there's a fun fact.
Wow.
Not really useful, but just impressive.
I think it's super impressive. So yeah, someone find that for us.
Big Maple coming soon to a Red Sox rotation near you.
Maybe not. he pitched in relief today and gave up like five hits in a row.
Oh,
didn't get an inning.
Did he actually? Wow. I didn't. Yeah. I always see him in the dugout. I just assume that he is always on the IL. I didn't even hear that he was back. Well, I would say good for you. No,
it was a rehab appearance.
Oh, a rehab appearance. Okay.
Even worse.
Let's get into those waiver wire pitchers. We mentioned Johan Oviedo already. Let's put him up against some other names that look good. Mackenzie Gore turned in another quality start up against the Orioles. Six innings, three runs, seven strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes on 103 pitches. The only issue for Gore recently has been the walks. Four walks exactly in three of four starts, but I've been pretty impressed by the whiff numbers for him. Kyle Bradish, awesome in his return at the Nationals. Six shutout with six strikeouts there, 11 swinging strikes on 92 pitches. And Griffin Canning, solid once again at the Yankees, 5 1/3, two runs, four strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 100 pitches. That is a great ratio. He's using a four pitch mix, and he averaged 94.5 miles per hour on his fastball. That's more than he's ever averaged on the fastball. So I think this is really encouraging stuff. Chris Towers, we'll start with you this time. How would you rank Oviedo, Mackenzie Gore, Kyle Bradish, and Griffin Canning? You are muted, sir.
I think it's Oviedo at the top, Gore. I'll give Canning third on that list. And then
No love for Kyle Bradish, huh?
It's a good park. It's a decent situation suddenly, Baltimore, but I don't know if there's a ton of upside there. So I'll go with the other three guys ahead of him, but I'm keeping an eye on him for sure. You know, the swing strike rate in this start was pretty good, but not overwhelming. Gore, I really want to believe, but he's so fastball heavy that he's so fastball heavy and the control is so middling that, like, I wonder how sustainable the swing strike rate is. He did get nine swings and misses with the fastball today, which is very impressive for a fastball. But yeah, that's my only concern. It's like what we saw last year, where even when he was doing well early on, it was just like, how sustainable is this? The walks are still a problem, 16% over the course of his four starts. So I think he's a little behind Oviedo, but I don't want to say there might be more upside there just because Oviedo is showing quite a bit of upside here. But I do think Gore, you know, has a path to having something click and turning into a really, really good pitcher.
Bradish is another beat the waiver wire two-star pitcher for next week, too. It looks like he's got the Red Sox and at the Tigers next week. So solid, solid matchups for him. 26% rostered. Griffin Canning, if you're just looking for a single start streamer for next week, it looks like he's going up against the Oakland A's. That is a fantastic matchup.
Great.
Speaking of those Oakland A's, let's talk about the debut of Mason Miller, who we were so excited about to talk about yesterday. Made his debut, which, by the way, that now marks 3 weeks in a row recording on a Welsh Wednesday night that we got a prospect, a pretty big prospect, making their debut when you're here. So I absolutely love it. Let's get Brandon Pfaadt on next Wednesday, right?
It could line up. You never know. We could get that lined up. I don't know.
Let's make it happen. Mason Miller up against the Cubs, 4 1/3, 2 runs allowed, 5 strikeouts for him, 10 swinging strikes on 81 pitches. 5 of those came on the fastball. He had a mostly 3-pitch mix, 63% fastball usage, which he averaged 99.4 miles per hour on, 22% slider, 14% cutter. 15 of his fastballs were 100 plus miles per hour, 42% rostered. Looks like he will line up for 2 starts next week as well. Welsh, what did you see from Mason Miller, and where does he rank amongst that group that we were just talking about?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot that's just like mind-blowing about the whole process, because I've been pretty vocal lately that, like, Mason Miller is super exciting. He's someone I talked about in the AFL, because this guy hit, I remember the day he hit 102 in the AFL and everyone was buzzing about it. They're like, whoa, who is this guy that's putting up these big, big velocity numbers? But the thing I can't overcome, and I don't know how it plays out, is he has 30 professional innings. Now he does, but he didn't before this.
Yeah.
And this is across since he's been with this organization. He got a few in the AFL, and this is a bad, horrifically bad team. And I just don't know how this is going to play out. I guess it doesn't matter in the short term if we want to look at it, because he was good. He did do something that looked like it was a little bit different. He's kind of been a fastball cutter and then trying to implement the slider a lot more. It looks like the comfortability is there, and he threw that slider more than the cutter in this one. But he's like just big spin numbers. He attacks the zone. He feels very Hunter Greenish in retrospect, except this is like in the first year, because Hunter Green is, you know, almost mixed in with the slider. Mason Miller does not have that. He was 63% fastball in this because he's got this big overpowering fastball. So at the end of the day, it's all exciting. One walk, the command was not a problem in this, but overall I would say watch the command long term. He kind of reminds me of I don't even know if I said this to you, Frank. We were talking about Lodolo the other day, and he reminds me of Lodolo in the thing, this is what I'm worried about: how deep will Mason Miller get to go into games long term? Here, are they going to put a pitch count on him? He's a guy that throws a lot of pitches, big fastballs, get strikeouts like Lodolo, and Lodolo can be 80 pitches into the fourth or something like that, and they let him go 100 so he can get qualified wins. I don't know if Mason Miller is going to get to that, and that's my worry about the value. So kind of putting it all in. And by the way, I feel bad because I feel like I'm the only person that's like a little poo-poo-y about him. Everyone's like, oh my God, our savior's here. Mason Miller, gif, gif, gif. Everyone's going nuts about it. I'm just like a little bit tapered down. I think from an excitement standpoint, I think you could put Miller at 2. I want to put Gore at 1, but I'm going to put him at 2 because I'm really impressed with Oviedo, especially with that slider usage. I think that's just such a good key for young pitchers. It's what I wanted Dre Jameson to do, throw the slider more than the fastball. So I'll go Oviedo, I'll go Gore, and then I think I'll put Miller right in that group. And then I'm with Chris. It's like, you know, Canning, Bradish is kind of on the back end. But from an excitement standpoint, Miller has the highest upside. But I just don't see how he pitches the whole year. But what the hell do I know?
And I think those are all very, very reasonable concerns that, like, I will worry about if he becomes 100% rostered. And then we start talking about, hey, should I trade him for player X? You know, like right now when we're talking about a guy who's, what, 20% rostered, 30% rostered?
41.
41% rostered. The long-term upside is not really the question. You know, it starts to become the question when you're asking, should we trade him for Luis Garcia, you know, or somebody in that range, you know, a Reed Detmers or a Patrick Sandoval, like somebody who has plenty of upside in their own right. That's when it's like, okay, no, that's he's got injury concerns. He's got innings concerns. He's got injury concerns because he's, you know, struggled to stay healthy since being drafted. And so, yeah, those are real concerns for another day, I think.
Yeah, my concerns are about the chaos. At the end of the day, you go pick him up. I picked him up in a league. You do some fab. I would not drop more fab than I would have on Taj Bradley. I think I would probably do maybe 60% of that, whatever that is in your mind. I was more aggressive on Taj Bradley than most. A couple people like, why do you spend so much early? Taj Bradley's amazing. I'm not treating him like Taj Bradley. So you should pick him up and you should try to get him. And you can worry about those things later. But for you guys that start asking the questions, hey, should I drop Reed Detmers? You know, should I drop this guy and that guy? And what chaos should I do? That's what people are asking. What should I do this? That's where I'm like tapered back of like, is he going to go five? Like how, if he had 15 starts being an Oakland A and a guy that is going to probably have a hard time getting into the fifth, like how many wins do we think he's going to have? And that is a stat we have to think about. How much run support is he going to have? And will the command ever be an issue? I am being way too dad about it. Just go pick him up, have fun, but don't go crazy. I'm telling you guys, you stay out late. Come home, keep your cell phone on and don't stay out too late and be safe. That's what I'm telling you with Mason Miller. That's your dad talking.
Chris, did I hear some kind of like cat fight in the background?
Decided to start fighting, which is usually
they got so mad about my Mason Miller.
They're usually great. They're usually sweethearts, but yeah, for some reason they just started fighting. I apologize for
That's an omen. Go, the cat fight.
The literal cat Mason fight.
Miller. Drop all your fab on Mason Miller. Don't listen to me. I started a cat fight because of it.
Two pitchers that I had as potential drops. Brady Singer hit hard once again. Mike Clevinger, he was quite bad. I wasn't buying it all along because like the strikeout to walk numbers are not good and his underlying metrics are quite bad as well. Chris Towers, are you okay dropping Singer and Clevinger for, I don't know, all of these names basically?
Yep. Oviedo, Mason Miller. My cat just jumped on my desk, so you saw her tail if you're watching.
That was approval.
I'm totally fine. Like Singer, I thought there was some interesting stuff. Obviously, the stretch last year, and then he was another Royals guy who came out throwing harder. The extension was longer. All these changes, but his slider's been awful so far. It's been getting hit hard. It hasn't really been getting whiffs. I think it's fine to drop him.
Oh my God. I don't know if you've looked. He is the bottom one percentile in average EV, bottom one percentile hard hit, bottom two percentile in expected ERA, bottom two in expected batting average, X slug, and bottom 5% barrel. Remember when we all loved all those Royals pitchers? We're like, oh, Chris Bubich like, and Brad Keller. Yeah, exactly. Remember in those days when those easy.
Yeah. And the thing with Singer is like, he really leaned into the slider last season and it helped fuel the breakout. And it's not been there for him.
Mm-hmm. Let's take our first break. And when we return, we'll talk about a few other pitchers here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. Ever dream about buying Fantasy Baseball Today merch? Well, now you can with a brand new Paramount Shop, which offers a mountain of merch from the Paramount shows and movies that you love. Shop official apparel, drinkware, and accessories inspired by over 150 fan favorite titles. Paw Patrol, Yellowstone, Top Gun, Star Trek, South Park, SpongeBob SquarePants, and your favorite CBS sports podcasts like Pick Six, Fantasy Football Today, and of course, Fantasy Baseball Today. Scan the QR code in the top right corner if you're watching on YouTube, or head to ParamountShop.com, Paramount Shop, where products are paramount. A couple other pitchers that I had, not nearly as exciting as the ones we've already mentioned. Eric Lauer had a strong start at the Mariners, 7 2/3, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts in that one. Cal Quantrill turned in a scoreless start at the Tigers. He did leave early because he took a line drive off of his leg. Taijuan Walker has now turned in back-to-back quality starts. He was at the White Sox in this one, 6 1/3, 2 runs, 3 strikeouts for him. And Nick Martinez had his best start of the season up against the Braves of all teams, 7 shutouts. With 6 strikeouts, and I did have one more. Marco Gonzalez, where did this come from? No clue. 6 innings, 2 runs, 9 strikeouts for him. Welsh, anything with these slightly less exciting pitchers? Marco Gonzalez, Nick Martinez, Taijuan Walker, Cal Quantrill, and Eric Lauer.
Eric Lauer is always interesting. Remember last year he had that like insane early season run where his fastball was like elite reliever-esque. It was like the most, it was the most dominant single fastball of any starting pitcher. So like he can tear that thing on. So I guess I'm always kind of maybe watching him. Taijuan Walker. Taijuan Walker is the one that I kind of like, I keep going back to. Hard hit has gone down. K percentage kind of wavering. The only thing that has been bad is he's just been walking a whole bunch. But I think early season on stuff has taken away. He's under great team context in there as well, by the way. I mean, obviously, the Phillies are going to do great work in it. And overall, you know, the one of the bigger changes I guess we've seen is the split finger has been a decent amount more. He was a primary just by a little last year fastball. He's gone, and it was 29 to 27% mix. It's 36% on the split finger this year and 25% on the fastball. Both better batting average against so far this year. So his primary pitches, hitters are not really getting a hold of. He's got a great team behind him. So I kind of like Taijuan Walker. I kind of target him and, you know, half decent matchups as a guy that you can play bets on and try to get into spot starts.
Speaking of matchups, if you are just looking to stream any of these guys for next week, Eric Lauer looks like he's going up against the Tigers, and Cal Quantrill has the Rockies. That start is in Cleveland. So obviously you get the Rockies on the road. That's much better. Last thing on Lauer is I agree that fastball was great last year. So far, it is down nearly 3 miles per hour compared to last season. He is averaging 90.6 miles per hour compared to 93.3 last season. Let's get into some news and notes. Crazy scene out in Los Angeles as Max Scherzer was ejected for a foreign substance, either on his hand or glove. Both Scherzer and Buck Showalter argued that it was a mixture of rosin and sweat, which would be legal technically. Scherzer is now facing a 10-game suspension as well. Something that I saw on Twitter is that apparently umpire Phil Cuzzy has been the umpire in all three of the ejections that have taken place so far. So I don't know if it's clearly just something about him. Chris Towers, like, do you have any take on this? Because I feel like it was a pretty wild scene out there in LA.
I don't really know what to think. I mean, there's been a lot both towards the end of last season and then in spring training this year talk about pitchers have figured out something to get their spin rates back. You know, just league-wide spin rates have not quite gotten back to like the spider tack era, but they've been higher than they were immediately post crackdown. And whether it's sweat and rosin or sunscreen, whatever, there's clearly something going on. And there was a report earlier in the season or before the season that MLB was going to crack down on it. It could be just be Scherzer got unlucky. But you know, the way this works is they confiscate the glove and they'll test it. And you know, that'll be the determination to see if he's going to be suspended for 10 games. So we'll find out, but I certainly hope he isn't suspended for the teams where I have Max Scherzer. That's about all I can say. I don't have concern that like, oh no, Max Scherzer's not going to be good anymore. Like that, I don't think that's a concern here.
One thing that annoys me most about just umpires and referees in sports is the lack of consistency. Mm-hmm. And this happened with Domingo Germán a couple of days ago over the weekend where he was warned about something that was on his hands. Go wash it off. He came back out for the next inning and apparently it was an issue again and they left mm-hmm. him in the game. And, you know, the Twins manager, Rocco Baldelli, got ejected as a result. I don't blame him, but there needs to be some consistency. Like if Phil Cuzzi is enforcing this and other umpires aren't, then why not? Like, that's just the thing that annoys me so much about, like,
that's what I was going to mention, by the way, because I think that was like, I think a lot of people were kind of assuming that you said the spin rates are back up, that there might be just some agreement across the board that, hey, this, whatever this is, I don't know what this is, by the way, but whatever this is going to be accepted. And that is fueled by that whole Domingo Germán situation where they were just like, hey, I told you to get rid of, you know, they're like openly talking about it. Nothing's happening. No big issue. And then to your point, you then have, you know, the rosin police in whoever it was today and just absolutely losing their mind and freaking out. And that consistency between umps, it's a really bad look. It's a bad look. Obviously, mm-hmm. it should be fixed. Have some, whether you're using it or not, I kind of don't care. I'm one of those people. I just, if you're going to use some substances, just be consistent, have the umps be consistent. But this is just like a bad look overall. And Scherzer lost his mind too. Also, I swear on my kids. He was swearing on my kids that I didn't use it. And I really hope that's going to be the case when they check out that glove, too.
Yep. Trevor Rogers left his start early and was diagnosed with left forearm tightness. And Welsh, immediately my brain goes, Yuri Perez. Are we going to get Yuri Perez? And I just checked. And so far, his first two starts have not been so great in the minors.
Yeah, I don't think he's he's definitely a possibility. And I love all the work that he's done with this team and with Sandy Alcantara in the offseason. But I think he's just like I think it's just too early for them to put mm-hmm. that in, especially with where Rodgers is going. It's fun, but you know, he's not in that conversation. Like we're talking a little, like Ricky Tiedemann is someone that might be up soon, but he's only had two starts since his injury. I think we're like a month away from really getting to focus, because all we've been focusing on is what? We've been focusing on like Brandon Pfaadt and Mason Miller, and everybody on the planet's focused on Tanner Bibee. In about a month, we'll start turning our attention to like Yuri Perez and Ricky Tiedemann. Those would be the guys we'll start thinking about. It's a little too early, but I agree with you on the Trevor Rogers. It kind of gets your brain going.
The fact that Perez is repeating Double A, I think, is the sign that he's probably like, he probably needs a good stretch before he's really in consideration. Because and he had the 4.08 ERA at Double A last season. It was 19. His strikeout numbers were amazing, but you know, they probably want him to prove he's overmatched for or over qualified for Double A before they call him up, I would guess.
Jorge Mateo was removed from Wednesday's game due to right hip discomfort, which is unfortunate. He's been one of the best players in baseball so far this season. Initial tests on Carlos Rodon's back came back normal. The Yankees are still waiting on a few other tests before determining the next steps for Rodon. Mariners GM Jerry Dipoto believes that Robbie Ray could return in the middle of May, but that's just a guess at this point. Ray hasn't resumed a throwing program yet. I'm not really sure how Jerry Dipoto came up with this timetable, if he really has nothing to back it up, but this was a report, so I am reporting it to you. No surprise, but Taj Bradley will remain in the Rays rotation and is scheduled to make his next start Monday against the Astros.
Has it been weird at all? Can I just add, has it been weird that like every start is like, yeah, we're going to start him this time, guys? Why is it? I think it's weird that there's no commitment.
I don't know what's going on with the Rays. Like how long it took them to put Springs on the IL, how long it took them to confirm Bradley was coming up. Yeah, it's very strange. I don't really understand it.
I've been just super weirded out by that situation where there was just like, hey, good news. I think Mark, I'm forgetting his name.
Mark Topkin.
He was just like, hey, good news. He is going to start this day. And it's like, yeah, isn't he going to start all the days? Why isn't he going to be the guy?
It doesn't, at this point, at least, I don't need to be told that Tosh Bradley's going to make his next turn in the rotation.
But apparently we do. Apparently we do with the Rays. So just, keep that in mind. You all own him now, look, so you don't really have to worry, I guess.
Maybe they can save $40,000 by sending him down for a week, and maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
it sounds like a Marlins move.
Would not surprise me with Tampa Bay. Corbin Burns is still scheduled to start Sunday's game against the Red Sox. Good news on him. Ramon Laureano was placed on the IL with a left groin strain. Starling Marte left Wednesday's game due to neck stiffness. Carlos Carrasco is dealing with a small bone chip that is causing swelling and discomfort in his right elbow. He went on the IL on Tuesday. Garrett Mitchell was placed on the IL with a shoulder subluxation and will go for an MRI on Thursday. And Welsh, again, the prospect senses are tingling. I started thinking about Sal Frelick, but apparently he was not in the lineup on Wednesday because he was dealing with a jammed thumb.
Don't like that. Not good. I watched, by the way, that live happen. It was in extra innings, and Garrett Mitchell was trying to launch the ball from center field to throw them out at home. And he threw it, and he went down grabbing that shoulder. Ooh, so I don't think it's not going to be anytime soon. Yeah. So I actually think, regardless of like the jam finger thing, it might be sneaky to go and get Sal Frelick in there, just because I fear that this could be maybe a longer thing. Because those type of injuries, I'm wrong, like, that type of like shoulder thing, I don't think that's going to be like a short-term thing. And they might look for like a more long-term option. And Sal Frelick is that guy that everyone was pissed when Joey Weimer got the call up, because Frelick has absolutely been dominating, was great in the WBC. So maybe this news will give you an opportunity to sneak him on a roster before it becomes official, maybe over the next week or so. Just me speculating.
And in case people are wondering, what can I get from Sal Frelick? It's, I've heard Stephen Kwan, but better comps. Like, it's hard to say because Stephen Kwan has actually been really good so far in the majors, but that is the type of player that you're hoping for with Sal Frelick. Alex Wood was placed on the IL with a hamstring strain. Manager Gabe Kapler said Ross Stripling has a good chance to move into the rotation. The Rockies reinstated Daniel Bard from the IL. Yoan Moncada is not expected to be back from the IL by the end of this week. He's been out with a back injury. Josh Donaldson has been pulled off his rehab assignment and underwent an MRI on his ailing right hamstring following a setback. Adam Wainwright threw three innings in his first rehab start at AA. He's 48% rostered. It's, he's a deep league player. It's not much upside at this point. The Dodgers placed Miguel Rojas on the IL with a hamstring injury. Trevor May was placed on the IL with anxiety-related issues. His teammate Danny Jimenez was transferred to the 60-day IL. I don't know if the Oakland A's will ever get another save opportunity, but if they do, I think it's probably going to go to Zach Jackson, but that's just my guess.
Oh, maybe they'll troll us all, and then they'll announce Mason Miller is going to be the closer. Oh, that would be a great troll.
I mean, either way, I guess he'd have value for fantasy, right?
So. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Hunter Gaddis was optioned to AAA. The Guardians could turn back to Gaddis to make starts in the future, or they can go with Tanner Bibee. So just another name to pay attention to there for prospects. Speaking of prospects, Guardians called up Brian Rocchio for their doubleheader and then immediately sent him back down. So he's like kind of on the fringe. He's a name to know in case there's like an injury. I know Amed Rosario has been dealing with a back injury. So just remember the name. That's spelled R-O-C-C-H-I-O. Manuel Valdez was called up by the Red Sox, though it sounds like that could be temporary as well. He went 2-for-4, also had an error in his debut. Let's get into some waiver wire hitters. Man, we have talked for 40 minutes. We have not talked about hitters at all on this podcast. So I do apologize, but I think there's a reason for that. I think deciphering pitcher changes this early in the season and velocity jumps and pitch mix changes and really figuring it out early on can set you up for the long term of the season. So I think it makes sense to really focus on pitching this early in the season.
Every start that a pitcher makes is more information than any given game for a hitter.
Right.
I think that's just the long and short of it.
Some outfielders that could be available. Brandon Marsh is really hot to start the season so far. He went 2-for-4 with his third home run. He's batting .368 early on. We spoke about him last week, and I think his strikeout rate was around 20%. That has shot all the way up to 31%. He's still hitting the ball hard, but don't love those strikeouts for Brandon Marsh. Josh Lowe keeps playing well whenever he gets an opportunity. 1-for-4 with 2 RBI, 2 runs, and his third stolen base. Alec Thomas finally on the board with his first home run. He is batting .176. His expected batting average is .298. He is hitting the ball really hard, and he's not striking out, but a lot of that has been on the ground. So that's been the issue with Alec Thomas. Trevor Larnach hit his second home run, and Joey Gallo, first game back, 2-for-5, hit his fourth home run. A lot of these names are widely available. Chris Towers, they all offer very different things. I'll ask you about points leagues, and then Welsh, I'll ask you about category leagues. If you're looking to add one or two of these names in a points league, who stands out most to you?
I don't necessarily love any of these guys in a points league, actually. I think they're all probably better in Roto. If I had to pick one, it would probably be Alec Thomas for points leagues, just because the plate discipline here is better than it is for anyone else. Josh Lowe, if I thought he was going to play every single day, I'd be very excited because I really like what I've seen from him, but it just hasn't been the case for him, and it's the Rays, so I don't think it's going to be the case. So Alec Thomas, I really like the skill set. I really like what he's shown. He hits the ball hard. He's athletic. He doesn't strike out. It's just a lot of those things were true last season, and the production wasn't there for some reason. He's just struggled to figure it out, but his expected WOBA is 349. His actual WOBA, 234. That's a massive, massive gap. And, you know, playing half your games in Chase Field, guys tend to underperform their expected stats, but not by 120 points. So yeah. I think Alec Thomas remains very interesting.
And he's playing. He is playing a lot right now. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for volume, you could pick Alec Thomas up and hope he just keeps doing what he's doing, and eventually the numbers will come. Welsh, for you, any names here that stand out from a category Roto League perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said with Alec, you got to keep him in mind. The one thing I would add to that as well is the Diamondbacks are the fastest, you know, most running team in baseball. When they get on the base paths, they are going. Alec Thomas actually got called out for a stolen base, I think, today or yesterday. I pretty much watch every game. So that's a guy, he's going to keep running. And if you do see a mold of the batting average coming back up, he's going to get on base more, which will equal more stolen base opportunities. So I think that's good. I'm very interested in Brandon Lowe. The only thing is like...
Wait, Brandon Marsh or Josh Lowe? Because he said Brandon Lowe.
Oh, did it? Well, I think that Brandon Lowe, actually. There was Brandon Lowe. Yeah. I mixed them both together. Josh Lowe is very fascinating because of the big counting stat numbers. The problem is the worry of consistent playing time. So I go back to Brandon Marsh, and Brandon Marsh, with like, he's going to play. He's going to keep going. I don't like the strikeout uptick, but the one thing I'm also trying to focus on is in very short sample sizes, these swing up and down, and that, you know, we saw a lower strikeout percentage a little bit early on, that he can keep leveling this out. And I think that type of hot bat can keep going. So he doesn't provide the stolen bases, but I think all three of these guys have a home. I just think Brandon Marsh is probably the most consistent. Alec Thomas actually probably has the best stolen base upside. And if Josh Lowe were given the opportunity, he's probably the most well-rounded. So, you know, pick and choose, you know, follow your own journey there.
If you need a catcher in a two catcher league, Jonah Heim has been playing very well. He went 2-for-4 with his third home run. He added 3 RBI and 3 runs scored on Wednesday. He is batting .311. The plate discipline has been solid. He's hitting the ball hard. 38% rostered is Jonah Heim. Again, that's more for two catcher leagues. And then in deeper formats, Towers, two names that stood out to me, Leody Taveras. We've seen flashes at times. I think he's always been more of like a potential than actually like realized potential. So far, but he went 3-for-5 with a double, triple, 2 runs, 2 RBI. Jarren Duran, very sneakily, is back with the Red Sox. He has started 3 straight games. He's got 4 hits and a stolen base during that time. So, you know, maybe he's made some adjustments. He was someone we were excited about last year. We're talking like 15 team, 5 outfielder leagues, but any interest in Leody Taveras or Jarren Duran?
I like the way you phrased it. He's sneakily back with the Red Sox. Like they didn't, they didn't know. He had to he climbed over the Green Monster exactly and got in.
Got in on the laundry cart and just popped up. He's like, hey, everybody.
Yeah, Jarren Duran is a guy that I continue to be interested in. You know, at AAA, he's played 139 games total with 28 home runs and 36 steals. So there's clearly an interesting skill set. And if he shows anything, I'm going to be interested in him. So I'm probably more interested in him than Taveras, although I don't know, you know, how long Duran's going to stay up. We've seen this countless times over the past couple of seasons. They'll call him up for a week, send him back down. So he's going to have to earn his spot, but I think it's a really interesting skill set if he does figure it out.
Some signs of life from the prospect. Zach Neto went 2-for-3 with 2 doubles. He was batting 9th on Wednesday. That was with everybody in the lineup. Taylor Ward leading off. Trout and Otani obviously were in there. And Eddie Julian, that's what they call him on the Twins broadcast. So I guess that's what we're going with. he does not want to get sent down. He showed that on Wednesday. He went 3-for-4 with his second home run, 2 runs and 2 RBI in that game as well. The Pirates were awesome in Coors Field this past series. And I think I found the points league ad, Chris, if you need an outfielder in a points league. Andrew McCutchen, 2-for-5 with his fourth home run, more walks and strikeouts so far. He's sitting here and there because, you know, he's the Veterans Day off or whatever, but given the plate discipline, I think he's got 4 home runs and 3 steals. He looks rejuvenated in a Pirates uniform, and I really like what I've seen so far. In the deepest of leagues, Rodolfo Castro, he's got an everyday role now with O'Neill Cruz. He went 2-for-6 with his second home run.
I think he had like 3 batted balls over 95 miles an hour or 2 over 105, something like that. Obviously, you know, Coors Field. But yeah, he had two batted balls over 105 miles an hour today. Rodolfo Castro did.
Yep. You know, Austin Gomber will do that, Chris.
That's fair.
If you go up against Austin Gomber, I'm pretty sure you'll get like a 100 EV off him or something like that. Connor Joe, I'm going to mention the name again. Everyone knows Connor. I love Connor Joe. 3-for-5 with a double, 3 runs, 4 hard hit balls in that game. Has started 7 of the last 8 games for the Pirates. Just got his revenge series in there against the Rockies. He's 3% rostered. I think it's still mostly an NL only, but if he continues to play every day, might work his way into 15 team league discussion. So just remember, let's pay attention to the playing time with Connor Joe. Let's take our final break. And when we return, we got some Worryometer wake up, a player potentially to buy in dynasty leagues. We'll do that right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back, and we had a few players on the Worryometer yesterday that woke up in a pretty big way on Wednesday. Tommy Edman, he went 3-for-4 with his second home run, 5 RBI, 3 runs scored. He finished a single short of the cycle. It's always so interesting when that
happens. It's the easiest one.
I know, right? Well, what's happening? Juan Succo, he hurt us yesterday. He went 2-for-4 with his fourth home run of the season. The only run scored in that game between the Braves and the Padres. Jose Abreu, some good signs, 2-for-4 with 2 RBI in that game. Should you be looking to buy this player in Dynasty? Welsh, I want to get your thoughts. Spencer Torkelson went 2-for-3 with a double, hit his second home run of the season, 109.88 exit velocity, 417 feet, and he's posting some pretty interesting numbers right now. He's hitting the ball hard. The distribution of his batted balls looks better than it did last year so far this season. It's still very cold in Detroit this time of year. So I think, you know, as things start to heat up, maybe we could see the ball fly a little bit better there as well. What are your thoughts, man? I feel like Torkelson from a dynasty perspective is probably one of the hardest young players to figure out.
I agree. And, you know, pulling back the curtain, Frankie and I were talking about this a little bit because, and I think Scott and I did this in the offseason, we're both still a little bit, and I think I'm speaking for him a little bit, still interested in Spencer Torkelson and still kind of want to buy in. I think it's too early to completely have written him off. He's in the max EV 87, top 13 percentile, top at least 50 percentile, 60, I guess 35 percentile in hard hit numbers. That's still there. He's made some improvements off of last year. Those EV numbers are up. He's whiffing a lot less, showing a little bit more speed. I mean, he's trying to get there. He's got a 245 expected batting average as well. If we were to get a 245 batting average consistently through the year, I really do think there's a possibility that Spencer Torkelson could tap into 25 plus power on this bad team. I still believe in this guy. I still believe who he is. You've also seen a decrease in his strikeout percentage, which is a plus. So I want to be a believer that he is a cheap option in 15 plus dynasties that you can still go out and I don't know if you want to do the one for one we were talking about, but like I think Torkelson is in a really sneaky spot where like there are some prospects that are poking around in the majors or close that you could probably get Torkelson for or even less in league. So I think the power numbers are real and I think he's starting to make those improvements. It might just take another year or two, but you know, watch out. Watch out. You get 20 plus homers and a serviceable batting average from Torkelson this year.
Something that's very interesting with his plate discipline as well is, according to Fangraphs, his chase rate is nearly 42%. League average is around 30%. So he is chasing a ton of pitches. His swinging strike rate has not gone up. It's the same as it was last year. So I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, but the fact that he's being more aggressive and he's not swinging and missing more and his strikeout rate has actually come down, I think that's a good thing. So I don't know. I like what I've seen from Torkelson under the hood a little bit so far. In redraft, I think you get him for probably dirt cheap, right? Like dirt cheap. A free agent in most leagues. And in Dynasty, I still think Torkelson is pretty interesting. So don't give up yet. Let's get into some leftovers. A few pitchers worth mentioning. Drew Rasmussen, solid at the Reds, 5 shutout, 7 strikeouts. We know that he can pitch well against bad teams, but can he do it against the good ones? His only real test this year was against the Blue Jays, and he pitched poorly in that outing. So I think that remains to be seen. Alex Cobb was solid at the Marlins. 5 innings, 1 run, 8 strikeouts for him. Noah Syndergaard now has a quality start in 3 of 4 outings. Revenge game against those Mets. 6 innings, 2 runs, 2 strikeouts for him. And the overall numbers still look really bad because his one blow up was like a blow up. It was bad. But 3 quality starts outside of that. I'm kind of encouraged by Noah Syndergaard. Chris, it seems so like you want to say something. Yeah, I don't know, man.
So like Noah Syndergaard, like, if you had told me 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that Noah Syndergaard would be Kyle Hendricks now, I would not, because like that's basically the profile right now. He's had unbelievably good control. His changeup is awesome. It's basically his only swing and miss pitch, and he's giving up no hard contact. But he's also not getting strikes. He's not strikeouts. He's not getting swings and misses. It's just a weird, weird profile. And he might be able to make it work. Look, it's possible that Noah Syndergaard can keep this up and, you know, keep the walks down and be a useful pitcher for fantasy. But it's just weird. It's boggling my mind. And I don't know what to do about it.
Something he has been good at so far is limiting hard contact. I think that's... It's harder to, like, you need a bigger sample for something like that to stabilize, so we just don't know if we could actually trust it yet. But entering Wednesday, his swinging strike rate was 12.3%. He didn't get much in this start, but 12.3%, I mean, that's actually pretty good. So, I don't know. I remain confused. That's the word I'll use on Noah Syndergaard. Justin Steele is now 4 for 4 in quality starts. This one at the Oakland A's. 6 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts for him. And Charlie Morton has now turned in back-to-back quality starts at the Padres. 6 innings, 1 run, 5 strikeouts for him. Welsh, anything that stands out from this group? Morton, Steele, Syndergaard, Cobb, Rasmussen.
Well, right. You know, it's funny in betting a little bit. I actually want to say Rasmussen might have had a similar swinging strike percentage as Noah Syndergaard. I want to say it was around the 12s as well. So just throwing that out there. Justin Steele, again, is just a big old red baseball savant page as far as like the hard hits. He's not giving up. He's still striking guys out, which you love to see. It's a career high K percentage currently with a career low walk percentage. His expected ERA, is, you know, stupid. It's like 1.42, but his expected is just around 3. He just really is one of those like sneaky, I don't want to call him an ace, you know, because he's not like a top 30 pitcher, but he's just one of those guys that's going to put up some big, big performances. The Cubs have been playing a little bit better, and I'm very much into Justin Steele.
And for anyone who's skeptical about Justin Steele being a two-pitch pitcher, his fastball is in the 83rd percentile in spin rate. So that's something that helps it play up, and it's not to the same level as Christian Javier, but that's kind of what it reminds me of. Is you got this deceptive fastball, high spin, and then you have a really good slider to go along with it. And that is how Justin Steele is succeeding right now.
And he's using it more. He's using it more this year. You talk about all of that, those spin numbers. He is using that 56% last year. He's up to 60% this year, and it's a 26% whiff rate. And he's doing all of this as a two-pitch pitcher. This is like, you know, not as talented Spencer Strider type of stuff. This is fastball, slider. But he's got up almost 40% whiff rate on his slider right now. So, I mean, he's getting it done in a probably non-traditional way that you really want, like in two pitch pitchers, but that fastball plays up in a bunch of different areas that it's also making that slider even more effective.
Some hitting leftovers. Jeremy Peña went 1-for-3 with a sock and a shoe. Third home run and fifth steal of the season. He is batting just .211 early on, but at least he is giving you that power and speed. Whit Merrifield went 2-for-3 with a double and an RBI, and I heard on the Blue Jays broadcast that Whit has earned everyday playing time. The first couple of weeks, he was playing like 4-5 times per week, but he's batting over .300. They like what they've seen. What Merrifield's going to play every day moving forward. Yandy Diaz looks like he's kind of breaking out. 2-for-4 with his sixth home run. He had 9 all of last season. He already has 6. The exit velocity, 114.5 off the bat. That's back-to-back home runs, back-to-back games with a home run for Yandy Diaz with the improved launch angle. Towers, someone asked me, would I drop Ketel Marte or Miguel Vargas for Yandy Diaz? And I kind of struggled and I said no, but I don't know if that is the right answer. And then, of course, I had a Twitter fantasy analyst say, oh, what are you talking about? You have to pick up Yandy Diaz. I'm like, Ketel Marte has a pretty extensive track record. His best has been better than anything we've seen from Yandy Diaz. And Miguel Vargas is a top prospect. So, no, I'm not going to drop those guys for him.
I might do it for Miguel.
It's like we talked about yesterday. This might be your only chance to get Yandy Diaz. And if it is a breakout, the risks of not adding him are probably greater than the risks of dropping Miguel Vargas, because until Miguel Vargas starts to hit, he's not necessarily going to get added. And so I think it's a situation where you might be able to pull that off. I'm really struggling with that one because I believe in Ketel Marte and Miguel Vargas, but what Yandy Diaz is doing right now, like we said yesterday, if he was breaking out, it would look exactly like this. And so I wish Ketel Marte still ran. That's the one. That's the too. One thing
I did. I was watching the game. I think it was yesterday's game, and he was on first and he just had his hands on his knees and he wasn't moving. They did that shot where you can like look to the first baseman. And that was a moment where I was like, wow, this team is running at all costs. There's no chance that guy is moving. He is not moving whatsoever. Those numbers are not coming. Those stolen base numbers are not coming.
Yeah, I feel like Ketel Marte's hamstrings are like, when you see in a movie, it's like a rope is about to break and it's hanging by like just that one thread. Like, those are Ketel Marte's hamstrings. So he's just like, nah, I'm not going to risk it. Trey Turner had his first real breakout game with the Phillies. He went 3-for-5 with a sock and a shoe as well. His first home run, his fourth steal. He's batting .321 early on. Brandon Nimmo, awesome game. He went 5-for-5 with his first home run of the season. 110 exit velocity, 431 feet for the home run. Anthony Volpe went 2-for-4. I actually think it's Volpe, and I keep saying Volpe, and it's probably... I'm just messing.
I heard the announcers do it 3 different ways. I've heard them do Volpe, Volpe. Don't kick yourself, Frank.
Yeah, he went 2-for-4 with a walk and his 8th stolen base. Again, it's like patience, you know? It's going to take some time. And in 5 games in the leadoff spot, he has 5 hits, a home run, and 2 steals. And even with LeMahieu healthy now, they're batting Volpe in the leadoff spot. And he's performing well, so.
You know, one thing I do want to go back to is Nimmo does have 3 steals, which matches his total from last season.
That is interesting.
You know, we know he loves to run to first base, but now he's also starting to run to second. And he's actually a good athlete, 87th percentile sprint speed, 84th percentile last year. So it's possible that he could be like a 15 steal guy. Now, I think I said before the season, I would find him a lot more interesting if he was a 15 steal guy, because he's going to give you pretty good on average, great on base percentage, and like 10 to 15 homers. But without the speed, it's like, that's a pretty middling profile. All of a sudden, if he can steal 10 to 15 bases, now you're talking about a 4 category contributor. So I that's something to keep an eye on with Brandon Nimmo.
And his Statcast page is covered in red too. So
yeah,
he is maybe a buy high right now on Brandon Nimmo. 15-15. He was one of, I think, 10 hitters with 100 plus runs scored last year. Mm-hmm. If he stays on the field,
he got like 111, didn't he?
He's going to be a productive player.
He steals more, he might have more runs.
Yeah. Aaron Judge went 1-for-3 with 2 walks and his 6th home run. I don't know if you guys saw it. Awesome moment in the first inning of that game. He robbed Shohei Ohtani of a home run in the top of the first. And then in the bottom of the first, he hit a 2-run home run. It was.
I'm officially going to say he's in the lead for the MVP race now.
Yeah, let's go.
Robbed a home run from his primary competitor and then hit one. So
that's his version of being a two-way player.
Exactly.
That's his Ohtani version. Gotcha.
Has to do that 29 times.
Just imagine if he hit the home run off of Ohtani. Oh, gosh. Oh, Twitter would have lost its mind.
It would have.
Let's get into some bullpen updates for the Royals. Scott Barlow pitched in the ninth inning, down 6 runs at the time. He gave up 3 more runs. His ERA is 9.45. I think we are firmly in the Aroldis Chapman camp at this point. For the Phillies, a 3-run lead. Gregory Soto pitched in the 7th. Craig Kimbrell in the 8th. Jose Alvarado in the 9th. That is saves on back-to-back days for Alvarado. You need to add this guy. If you need saves, 34% rostered. I think he has 19 strikeouts to 0 walks so far this season.
One of you guys gave me credit for adding him yesterday in the Dynasty League.
I know exactly what you're going to say. I looked at your team. I'm like, Chris, why didn't you start Alvarado?
Yeah. So much for that.
For the Mets, David Robertson got the 8th inning with a 2-run lead facing the top of the Dodgers lineup. He allowed 1 run. Adam Ottavino got the 9th with a 3-run lead, also allowed 1 run. He picked up his 3rd save. All of a sudden, David Robertson is clearly in the fireman role, like the biggest spot in the game. They are going to pitch Robertson out of the bullpen, and then that means it's going to be Ottavino getting more saves as well. So I think both of these guys have value for fantasy right now. For the Brewers, Devin Williams was unavailable. Matt Bush got the final 2 outs for his 1st save, and then the regulars, Emmanuel Clase, got his 6th save. For the Giants, Camilo Duvall pitched in the 9th with the game tied. Taylor Rogers.
That was an iffy one. He nearly blew that one for the Giants.
He's had multiple appearances like that so far this season as well. The only issue is his main competition, Taylor Rogers, has looked quite bad so far this season as well. For the Padres, Josh Hader walked 1 but picked up his 5th save. Let's wrap up with to stream or not to stream, and we will start with Thursday. Kent Maeda at the Red Sox.
Sure.
Silence is deafening.
Yes. Yeah, well, the Towers goes first. Towers goes first, me. That's our rhythm.
Fair enough. Tanner Houck versus the Twins.
No.
Nope.
Luke Weaver at the Pirates.
Nope.
No.
Jameson Taillon versus the Dodgers.
Not the worst one, but no.
Nope.
Michael Wacha at the Diamondbacks.
Nah,
I'm not going to fall for it again. No.
Roansy Contreras versus the Reds.
Nope.
I would. I could do that.
Yeah. Reds strike on the outs. Road. I think it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Strom versus the Rockies.
No.
That one's out of Colorado?
Yeah, it's in Philadelphia. First start away from Coors Field. So.
Yes, Matt Strom. I'm a Matt Strom guy. You get Matt Strom out there. There's another. There's six strikeouts guaranteed.
All right. very specific number. I love it. Ryan Nelson versus the Padres.
I wouldn't.
Oh, nope. Complete fail on my part. Gosh, it's the end of the podcast. It's Fernando Tatis Day. He's back.
Oh my God, yeah.
Gosh, what a fail. God.
It is Tatis Day.
No, wait.
I apologize. Uh-oh. Is that one guy in the chat telling us that Fernando Tatis is going to hit 230 this year with 10 home runs or whatever it is?
You know what we should do, Frank? Whatever his home run prop is tomorrow, smashing. Yeah, smashing whatever it is.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Sean Manaea versus the Mets.
Nah.
No.
And Michael Grove at the Cubs.
Nope.
No, sir.
On Friday, Yusei Kikuchi at the Yankees.
Gosh, it could go well, but I can't do it.
Also going to pass.
Drew Smyly versus the Dodgers.
Nope.
Nope.
Mitch Keller versus the Reds.
Yes.
I could, again, I'll pick on it. I'll go with Mitch Keller. Yes.
Tyler Wells versus the Tigers.
Nah.
Nope.
Braxton Garrett at the Guardians.
He's my second favorite here, but, you know, don't love it.
Pass.
J.P. Sears at the Rangers.
Nah.
No.
Seth Lugo at the Diamondbacks.
Lugo might actually be my second favorite.
Yeah, he's kind of
my second favorite to say no to.
Nope. Yeah, he's been up and down. And Steven Matz at the Mariners.
Nope.
Sure no.
All right, for Towers and the Welsh, I am Frank. Thanks, as always, for tuning in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.